On the phone with us today for a very special feature, we have Susan Green from The Independent, who recently did a story and has been a part of the release of Moses L., a man who was convicted and spent 28 years in jail after a wrongful prosecution. An amazing story recently just published that investigates a little bit of the experience with Mo's family and what this experience has done, across multiple lives. And on the phone with us today, Susan Green, editor of The Independent. Susan, thank you for being with us here today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And so glad, you know, you're a seasoned journalist. You've been, covering stories of this nature for a long, long time, and now here to talk about Moses L. and this amazing case. Susan, can you first tell me how you came in contact with Moses L. and what his situation is?
Yeah, I was at the Denver Post for years and worked on a year-long series, an investigative series with a partner, Miles Moffitt, called Trashing the Truth. It was about the loss and destruction of DNA evidence. And I met Clarence on that story because all of the evidence in his case had been destroyed. All of the DNA evidence, despite the fact that he had a court order to have it tested, was thrown in the dumpster. So I first met him about 10 years ago in prison, and his story was the first story of that series. It was a national series featuring people all across the country, and we thought his story was so egregious that we would begin it with him.
Well, how amazing that another inmate came forward and actually admitted to the crime instead, and then, you know, the courts then releasing him. And you were there when that happened just a few days ago. But before that, you wrote this story, Susan, that we'll, of course, tweet out after this, talking with his son and his family. What were some of the big impacts with this man's family that you cover in the story?
Well, I've been covering the impacts for years with these people. I mean, Anthony Burke grew up without his dad. Anthony was 3 when he was riding his bike in Five Points. Actually, his dad was riding the bike. Anthony was on the handlebars. And so Anthony grew up without a father. And the impacts of that, as well as the impacts of Anthony's children having grown up without their grandfather, are unspeakably huge. It tore them up emotionally. What it didn't do is tear them apart. They've remained close. They've spoken by phone and through letters for years. But this is not a feel-good story. This is a terrible, horrible thing that was done to these people over 28 years.
Absolutely. And, you know, what does a family do to recover from such a thing? And what is the big takeaway that you think people should have in regards to whether it's the criminal justice system or this isolated incident? What is it that makes this story point out to a larger problem?
Yeah, well, what they're doing is spending as much time together as they can. Clarence is just had the holidays with his family. He's getting to know his grandchildren and, reacquainting himself with Stephanie Burke, his wife, and Anthony, and they couldn't be happier to be together. Clarence is doing incredibly well and savoring every minute. The takeaway, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, this is such a complicated case, and there were so many twists and turns. I think the big takeaway is that, number one, Denver District Attorney Mitch Morrissey is still hanging charges over Clarence's head. He's still threatening to retry this case, even though he has absolutely no evidence against him. So one takeaway is that we have a DA who systematically, over years and years and years, has tried to stonewall, ignore, and block evidence that points to Clarence's innocence. And, Mitch is known as someone who is very adept at using DNA, especially to solve cold cases. And I think we all should know that every wrongful conviction is a cold case. And if L.T. Jackson, the man who has confessed in this case, was actually approached and spoken to years ago when Mitch Morrissey's office was prosecuting him on another rape case, if Mitch had actually been open to many people's strong suggestions that he reopen this case, Clarence wouldn't have done another 10 years in prison. So that's the takeaway.
Susan, it's Rodney on the other microphone. I also have a question regarding the entire dilemma of Moses Hill. He spent over half of his life, or close to half of his life, incarcerated in Colorado Institution. And when you look at what could happen for recompense, has there been any rumblings from the family in terms of how they plan on being compensated for 28 years of false incarceration?
I mean, at this point, no. I mean, Clarence just walked out last week. They've had their holidays. You know, I'm taking him today to just give him a ride to open a bank account. I mean, you know, this is step by step, right? You know, he's got to do things like go to the doctor and get a job and all of those things before he starts thinking about his next legal step. There's also the other hurdle, which is, as I mentioned, Mitch Morsi is still dangling the possibility of a new trial over his head. So all of that needs to be cleared. That said, there is a new law in Colorado, a fairly new law that compensates people who have been wrongly convicted. I think Clarence could stand to benefit from that. And although we've not really spoken about it, I am sure, given the systematic and intentional refusal by the city to reopen this case, he probably has a terrific civil rights case.
Well, important stuff to hear from you today. Susan Green, editor at The Independent. We will, again, tweet out this story at KUVO Jazz 89 so more people can really get into what's going on here. Thank you for sharing your experience with us today.
Thank you.
Take care.
We'll